morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. This is a conference call which is going to be speaking about the WCIC. The time is 21:07 UTC. Welcome, everyone, on the call. We have Nigel Hickson who is with us. Nigel Hickson is the Regional Vice President for Europe. And we also have, I believe, is it Mandy Carver from Global Partnership, if I get this correctly. Before we start, I just a couple of housekeeping notes. The first one being that everyone has to say their name when they start speaking. We happen to have interpreters for a French channel and also for a Spanish channel. So if you don't say your name before you start speaking, the interpreters will continue interpreting with the same voice, and therefore it will sound as though we had a few schizophrenics on the line speaking to each other. So that's the first thing. The second thing is to take time when speaking, because the interpreters do have to sometimes interpret some words which are a little more complicated than usual. So I would appreciate, and I think the interpreters would appreciate this very much. Other than that, the usual housekeeping, putting your hands up, etc., using the Adobe Connect do apply. So without further ado, I will hand the floor over to Nigel Hickson, who will be able to speak to us about the World Congress on Information Technology. So, Nigel, you have the floor.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for this opportunity to speak to you. I've got an echo on my line, but I'm happy to go forward if it's not affecting you.
Sorry to interrupt, Nigel.
Go ahead,
Gisela. Sorry, just Nigel Giesler for the transcript, just to say I don't hear an echo now. All the lines seem to be clear. You may proceed. Thank you.
Okay, well, I'll do my best. Yeah. So essentially, this is the a bit of a background briefing on the World Conference on the International Telecommunications. This is an ITU treaty-making conference, which is taking place in December in Dubai. The purpose of this international ITU conference is to assess and to revise the international telecommunication regulations. The telecommunication regulations were last adapted and even formed in 1988 in Melbourne. So one can understand that they are quite out of date.
So essentially, what is now going to...
What is going to take place? I'm sorry about this. The echo is really not very easy to talk over, but I'll do my best.
Sorry, Nigel Giesler here. If we may, have you connected via the audio bridge? Because we are now picking up a slight echo.
Well, I'm connected via Adobe Connect, I suppose. I could call in using the mobile.
Nigel, absolutely. Alternatively, we're more than happy to dial out to you. Apologies to everyone on the call. We just wish for Nigel to be as clear as possible and to allow for French and Spanish interpretation.
Right, well, perhaps if you could
if you could dial out to me, that might be what you could.
Yes, Nigel Giesler here. If you'd be so kind as to just send me your number via email, I am ready to have you dialed out immediately.
I'll put it on the Adobe Connect. Yeah, so essentially, as I was saying, this ITU conference is the first time since 1988 that the international telecommunication regulations are being amended. The importance of this process is that in bringing the international telecommunication regulations up to date, there's an opportunity both to improve the regulations to reflect the current business and technology environment, but also there's a threat in terms of introducing. Hello.
Hello?
Thank you, Nigel. We can now hear you. Please just remember to mute your computer speakers and you may proceed. Thank you very much.
Right.
Nigel, have you muted your computer speakers?
I have now, yes. Is that okay? Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear, thank you.
Yes, I do apologise. Right, let's carry on. So as I say, essentially this is an opportunity and a threat. The international telecommunication regulations were drawn up at a time when the majority of international carriers were still in government hands, and therefore governments needed to be instructed to, if you like, adopt certain processes and practices to ensure that the international telecommunication system was interoperable. Now, of course, the situation is entirely different. The vast majority of carriers are in private hands, and therefore the role of governments with respect to international and domestic carriers is very different indeed. The background to this review of the international telecommunication regulation probably goes back about 10 years, and there was some information in one of the papers on the agenda. But essentially, it comes down to a sort of intellectual argument to a large extent, is that if you have, as part of the ITU treaty, and then the ITU treaty, of course, is a treaty that's applicable to all 193 countries that sign up to the ITU. If you have some regulations that are part of the treaty, do you effectively amend them, or do you effectively just simply get rid of them? And that's the choice that the ITU had, and it will come as no real surprise that the ITU decided to amend the regulations. And therefore, in amending the regulations, there is an intellectual case that you bring them up to date to account for the current business and technology environment. And that's where some of the issues come in. So that's some of the history, that's some of the background, if you like. We have a situation where for the last couple of years, a council working group of the ITU, that's member states and sector members of the ITU are primarily businesses and trade associations that are sector members of the ITU. Over the last 2-3 years,
the member states and the sector members have been meeting in a council working group to come up with proposed changes to the international telecommunication regulations, and those proposed changes will be debated in Dubai in December. As some of you are aware, the document that the council working group produced in July is online. It's available as a public document, and it has indeed been widely sort of distributed. The problem, of course, is that this is not the end of the story, in that although the document itself contains a number of proposals that were put forward by countries and regional groups and trade associations, there will be additional proposals made by regional groups and member states right up till the beginning of November, and therefore the current document is only part of the overall picture of what will be finally debated in Dubai. So I'll stop there for a second and take any questions before I continue. Is there any queries at all?
Nigel Giesler for the transcript. We have Yelvi Atahun who has raised his hand. Thank you. Maybe on the French channel, so we will let the French interpreters get back to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is Yelvi speaking. My question is whether this meeting in December will be a meeting which has been organized according to the rules to review the treaty, or whether it's because of the impact of the internet today that this meeting has been organized. Thank you.
I mean, I think that's a good question. I mean, essentially, as I sort of tried to allude, there's a history to the process of amending the ITRs. I think it's true that for a period of time, there was, if you like, a debate between certain voices in the West, the US and Europe in particular, who would have been happy as member states for the whole ITRs just to be scrapped or to be put in a cupboard and never let out again, and a number of countries that thought they ought to be updated to reflect the current technology and business environment. I mean, and in the end, if you like, the latter view won out, and it was decided that given that they were part of the ITU treaty, that at least the ITRs should be reviewed and, if thought to be appropriate, updated. But of course, what happens in this sort of environment is once you start a process, it's very difficult to stop. And once people start putting forward proposals, then a dynamic takes over and those proposals are bound to be debated in some way or other. So that is what's taking place. I'm unable to see the Adobe Connect because I've lost all connectivity. I'm in a very bad wireless spot. So I don't know if there's any other questions or shall I carry on and describe some of the main issues before that have been raised. in the ICR.
Nigel Giesler for the transcript. There are no further hands raised. Thank you. You may proceed.
Right. Okay. Well, I do apologise. I haven't even got the agenda in front of me. I don't know what's wrong. I just can't get a connection at all at the moment. But I'll carry on. So, and you know, please do interrupt and ask questions, because that's what you'll have to do, because it's very difficult for me to even do anything at the moment. So we have a situation where, as I said, the council working group has produced a report, which many of you have seen, with a number of amendments to the articles of the International Telecommunications Regulation. And there will be further proposals made by regional groups and by member states, individual member states, right up to the beginning of November. A cut-off date for proposals has been set at the beginning of November, but it's quite possible that might be exceeded. The process will then be that all of these proposals that are made to amend the ITRs will be discussed at the WICKET conference in Dubai. The process will probably be that the proposals will be grouped into a number of different headings. So those proposals that affect perhaps cybersecurity will be in one group. Those proposals changing the definition and scope of the ITR, i.e. the debate about whether the ITRs should just cover telecommunication networks or whether they should cover the internet as well, that will probably be in another set of discussions. There'll be a set of discussions concerning perhaps issues like spam, like denial of service, like misuse of numbering and addressing. Various issues, as I say, have been raised, and there'll be discussions on those various issues. And there will be an attempt during those discussions to reach a consensus, to reach a coordinated view on what the ITRs should look like in the future. I mean, it's a dynamic. Once the discussions start, it's unlikely that there will be. Well, when I say it's unlikely, there has been some speculation that the whole process might fail simply because of the complexity of it. Well, that's always a possibility, but usually these types of discussions don't fail. They just reach some sort of compromise, which could be a compromise involving perhaps not a great deal of change to the current ITRs themselves, or alternatively there could be some changes. So that's the process. The WICKET discussion in December itself is for member states. Member states are the main actors in this discussion. Sector members can attend the discussion as well. So sector members, as I said, being businesses, being trade associations and other regional groupings, they can attend the discussions, but generally they can only speak if asked to do so by the chair. But that doesn't stop their influence, because as I said, what's likely to happen is that a number, perhaps up to 5 to 10 working groups will be set up to look at individual issues. And in those working groups, often you will get sector members playing a role, depending on the chairs of those working groups. So that's the sort of process. That's the process going forward. Now, of course, you might well ask, you know, what relevance does all this have to ICANN? And that's a debate, if you like, that's been played out in the media to an extent. It's a debate that's played out in, within the ICANN community itself. We had discussions on this to an extent in Prague. If you look at the proposals at the moment, the actual proposals that
the council working group have put forward for discussion at the wicket, I think it will be fair to say that there's hardly any proposals there that directly touch on the central ICANN mission, if you like. There are proposals to, if you like, have new cyber security laws, to have new laws on spam, to have all sorts of new regulations of the internet itself, but there's nothing particularly pertaining to the domain name system. Now, that doesn't mean to say that the ICANN mission is not affected by some of these proposals, and in the table that I circulated, you'll see that I have picked out a number of proposals, and this is only my take, and other people have got just as much right to decide on what proposals are important than I have, and some of the proposals are so badly worded that it's only guesswork, really, of what they mean. But essentially, there are a number of proposals which, if enacted, could affect the openness and the interoperability of the internet itself. So in that sense, there are a number of proposals that could affect the ICANN mission. There are also proposals, of course, which will be coming along in the future. We expect to see a whole range of proposals being made by, for instance, the African region and the Arab region towards the end of October, which in themselves could touch on the domain name system and on internet governance in general. So there's a lot to potentially play for, and that's why I think this debate is important for ICANN and for other internet players. Of those other internet players that we obviously work with, the ISOC. ISOC is a sector member of the ITU and therefore will be within the debate, and a number of the regional internet registries, including RIPE NCC, are also participants as sector members in the debate. So that in itself is obviously very useful indeed. I'll stop there again and ask if there's any particular questions.
Nigel Giesler speaking. I don't have any hands raised as of yet, and no questions in the chat either. Thank you.
Right. Yes, I mean, I have logged on again, so I'm hoping that I can get the Adobe screen up, and then I can see the page myself. I'm relying on a Wi-Fi network in an apartment in Brussels, which isn't particularly brilliant, but it has come back up again. Okay. Well, I've tried to explain, I know very briefly, a bit of the background and a bit of the process. I mean, clearly we could go into detail on some of the proposals, but I think that really might not be too valuable. I mean, I think what it is worth mentioning is some of the sort of background politics to this issue, and to just sort of put, if you like, this wicket discussion in context, because although this is a one-off discussion. As I said, the last time the ITRs were reviewed was in August, when the ITRs were drawn up in 1988. So this wicket is, if you like, a one-off event since 1988, and there's not likely to be another one for another 10 years or 15 years or whatever. The actual politics behind it are reflected in other discussions coming up in the ITU. Notably, in May next year, there's something called the World Telecommunications Policy Forum, which is not a treaty-making conference, but it is a forum which is specifically looking at internet governance issues, and therefore I think is relevant in that context. And then also later in the year, later next year and going into 2014 and 2015, we have what's called the WSIS review. This is the review of the World Summit on the Information Society. Now, this is important, as many of you know, and I do appreciate that many of you are far more experienced than I am on these issues, so I'm not trying to in any way reflect you understand this as much as I do. But the World Summit on the Information Society took place in 2003 and 2005 and established the so-called WSIS agenda, or the TUNIS agenda. That agenda was important because it explicitly recognized the ICANN model. It explicitly recognized the role of ICANN in relation to the domain name system and in relation to internet governance. And the WSIS agenda also established the Internet Governance Forum, the IGF, which is the sort of main body that discusses, multi-stakeholder body that discusses internet issues. Given that the WSIS is being reviewed in 2015, the UN could decide, for example, by 2014 or even in 2013, that the WSIS agenda itself should be revised, or at least should be subject to revision. And if discussions took place on revising the WSIS agenda, which is something that certainly a lot of people don't want, including ourselves, then it would mean that the whole, if you like, framework under which ICANN operates could well be amended. And as you know, as many of you will know, there are a number of countries that would much prefer the issue of internet governance and the issue of the domain name system to be under the control of the ITU or the UN rather than through sort of multi-stakeholder vehicle that we have. So that's some of the sort of context to these discussions taking place. And I'll pause again there because I think there might be some discussion.
Nigel Giesler here. We have a question from Alejandro Pisanti.
Right, thank you very much.
He did say maybe stand down and wait for the other speakers, but I will let him proceed if he wishes to ask his question. Thank you. Sorry, Alejandro Giesler again. Alejandro is typing in the Adobe Connect chat.
Giesler, it's Olivier. I think in the meantime, if we can take questions from others.
Yes, absolutely.
Anybody
Thank you,
Giesler,
for the transcript. Sorry, Giesler, again, if anyone has a question, I don't see any further hands raised and no questions in the Adobe Connect chat.
Okay, well, please interrupt me if there are any questions. I'll just carry on for another couple of minutes. And, I mean, as I said, the going back to the wicket again, One of the problems of this particular discussion is that the WICCET conference will amend a treaty. I mean, the treaty is the ITRs, the International Telecommunication Regulations. Call it what you will, it's amending a set of regulations, and therefore the dynamic will be that there will be some form of outcome of that process. Now, The member states, of course, are sovereign. Member states are sovereign. And therefore, if the outcome, if the ITRs, if the compromise text for the ITRs is not to the liking of individual countries, they can derogate from this particular part of the treaty. So it is true that, as has been reported in the US media, that the US government could say, for instance, we're not signing the new treaty. We're not, you know, we're just going to walk away from the process. But that doesn't in itself mean that the ITRs, the new ITR treaty, would not come into effect. No individual country can necessarily stop the ITRs coming into effect. And, I mean, it could be a vote, although it would be very unlikely that there would be a vote. If an individual country does not sign the ITR, then it means that the ITRs would not affect that country. But because we live in a global business community, that doesn't mean that the ITRs would not affect international business, international internet and telecom business. So, you know, if we take a silly example that the ITRs said that all phone boxes must be painted red, and those regulations came into effect, the fact that the US decided to pull out of that particular part of the treaty would mean that they would not have to paint phone boxes red in the US, but they would be painted red in the rest of the world. I know that's a silly example, but it does put in context the fact that one country really can't hold the whole of the process up to, can't sort of hold out on this process. But what is far more likely to happen is that because both the ITU and the United Arab Emirates, who are hosting the conference, will not want it to be a failure, there will be lots of compromise proposals made or lots of late-night sessions during which compromises will be worked out which are not damaging to the international community, but everyone can then represent as a success. I mean, that's what we all try and do in our various negotiations, I suppose. So I think that, and this is just a personal view of what could happen. I think the dynamic of the negotiation will be such that there will be a result. I suspect that result will not be of enormous damage to the international community, but it might set an unwelcome precedent in that it might include the internet as such within the scope of the international telecommunication regulations, and therefore subject to regulation perhaps at a future date. I mean, that's one solution. There could be a number of other solutions. And I'll pause again there.
Thank you, Nigel. It's Olivier here for the transcript record. I don't see any hands up. If Gisela could let me know if there are any. Unfortunately, I have a 6 or 7 second delay on my Adobe Connect. So anyway, I had a couple of comments and questions, Nigel. The first one being the actual ITRs themselves, the primary point being whether the Internet would fall under these regulations or not. The U.S. government has made it known through some of the papers that it has already published that it will fight back any attempts to bring the Internet under those regulations. What are the likely scenarios, then, starting from this fundamental difference in thinking, when other countries are trying to bring the Internet under these ITRs?
Yes, well, I mean, I think you've identified, you know, one of the key points that's going to be discussed. And here I think we have to, you know, we
if you like, you have to think carefully. And I was talking to someone earlier this evening about the wicket. I seem to have been talking to about the wicket all day, actually. I talked to a whole group of analysts this morning in Brussels about this. But it was only this evening that I came up with an example, which I'm not saying is brilliant at all, but might help explain what could happen. And that is that pretend the ITRs is like a picnic, and you and I are going on this picnic, and you representing the US want the picnic just to be of fruit. But I quite like vegetables as well, so I want vegetables in this picnic as well. But you're absolutely adamant that the picnic should only be of fruit. So what we do is, to compromise, we define the picnic as being able to cover both vegetables and fruit. Bear with me on this one. So the picnic we define as covering vegetables and fruit, but we agree that the only items in the picnic are fruit. So in other words, you get your way, that the only items that we take on this picnic are pieces of fruit. But I get my way as well, because I have established the fact that a picnic can include vegetables and fruit. And that, I think, is possibly the way that the discussions could go in the ITRs, in that there could be an acknowledgement that the international telecommunications environment, if you like, includes the internet, that the internet is an integral part of the communications environment as such. And this is a debate that, if you like, that took place in the European Union perhaps 10 years ago, when a similar debate happened, whether telecommunications should embrace the internet. And in the end, the scope of the European Union legislation under the directive encompassed the internet, because it was defined as communications rather than telecommunications. But, I mean, that's just a detail. So one could envisage a situation where one includes within the scope of the ITRs the internet, but one does not place any operative regulations on the internet as such. So in that sense, the US would be, if you like, vindicated, in the sense that they could say that the ITRs don't regulate the internet, because there's nothing in the actual articles themselves to say that the internet should be painted black or white or yellow or whatever. But other people could say that the scope of the ITRs does include the internet. It's just that there's no controls on it. So I think you could envisage that sort of situation. What I think will be difficult, Olivier, is to come out of that discussion in Dubai without the treaty mentioning the internet at all. I feel that it probably will mention the internet in some way, and so the solution might be to ensure that it mentions it in a way which doesn't do any damage to the economic imperative that the internet brings with it.
Thank you, Nigel. It's Olivier for the transcript. And seeing no other hands at the moment, I then have another question. If some countries do recognize then that the internet is included in the ITRs, and other countries do not recognize that the internet would be included in those ITRs, might this lead to a breakup of the internet? And might this also lead to some countries recognizing ICANN's legitimacy and others not recognizing it?
Sorry, can you flip for the transcript? We have interference on the line. Thank you. We have interference on the line. If everyone could just keep their microphones muted when not speaking. Thank you.
Yes, could you repeat the last part of that question, Olivier, if you don't mind?
Yes, sure. Of course, Nigel, it's Olivier for the transcript record. I was basically asking that if some countries recognize that the ICRs are legitimate, incorporate the Internet, and other countries do not recognize that the ICRs incorporate the Internet, might this then lead to a breakup of the Internet? And might this also lead to some countries recognizing ICANN's legitimacy and other countries not recognizing ICANN's legitimacy, since some of the ITRs actually ask for operating or licensed operating agencies to deal with network connectivity, etc. Something which effectively is coming back to the monopoly situation of the 1980s prior to the Internet even existing.
Yeah. I think that again an excellent question. I don't think that within the wicket itself, the wicket itself will not, I think, if you like, come out with anything that effectively breaks up the Internet. I mean, what it might do is include regulations or include principles that make it easier for countries to justify having national controls on the domain name system. So, for instance, Russia has made a proposal that it should be possible for them as a country or any other country to interfere with international traffic if that international traffic threatens the sovereignty of that country. Now, this is a proposal which, taken to its extreme, would simply mean that the Internet would no longer exist as such, the global Internet would no longer exist, because it would mean that you could simply, any country could approach any other country and say that they would have to, if you like, look at the international traffic going through their networks, and to stop any international traffic or to block any international traffic that was saying anything that in one country's view was a threat to their sovereignty. So if there was a Facebook page in the UK, or if there was a tweet in the UK that was saying things about Putin or something, just as an example, then under this proposal, you know, all that information would have to be taken down or something, and this would, you know, simply lead to the breakup of the Internet. So you could envisage that situation occurring, but I think it's very unlikely that within the context of the wicket that any proposal would be agreed, because, as I say, there has to be a consensus on what is taken forward, and I think it's very unlikely that there would be any consensus at all on those sort of proposals, and that's why I mentioned earlier what is equally important in addition to the wicket is this whole review of the WSIS agenda, the World Summit on the Information Society agenda, which, you know, this review that takes place over the next couple of years. And I think it's there that one is more likely to see the threat to the ICANN model itself.
Thank you, Nigel. Any other questions or comments from anyone?
Olivia, this is Heidi. There's a question from Eric Bruner-Williams. Do you see that in the chat?
There's a question from Wolf Ludwig as well.
Yeah, I don't see any questions on the chat at the moment. I see the agenda being updated, and it looks to me as though it's something from 10 minutes ago. So, Heidi, you're very welcome to go ahead with reading the question, please.
Okay, well, first, Wolf is first. So is the wicket not just a kind of symbolic policy from an old anarchist UN system trying to
anachronist.
Sorry.
Not anarchist, but anachronist. Sorry.
Sorry.
Wolf, can you read your...
Yeah.
Yes, Wolf Ludwig, for the records. My question is the VCIT not just a kind of, inverted commas, symbolic policy from an old or anachronist UN system trying to retain its influence in a field where old key players lost control?
Well, yes, and I suppose the answer to that is many people think that is the case. And, I mean, if you look at some of the proposals being made, for instance, there are some proposals, there is a proposal being made by ETNO, which is the European Telecommunication
Right.
Network organization, which seeks, if you like, to interfere directly in the commercial arrangements or seeks to sort of put things in place that would interfere in the way that the costings on the internet are currently take place. So, and that has been portrayed by some people as an attempt to sort of reset the balance between the carriers as such and the wider internet community, the Googles, the eBays, etc. And the Facebooks, the new internet players. So you could see it in that context. And indeed, some people have argued that because the ITRs themselves were drawn up in a time, you know, when we simply didn't have this current business models, you know, they're just not relevant at all. But unfortunately, we are in an environment in which they are going to be debated.
Thank you, Nigel. Next question was from Eric Brenner Williams. Is that correct, Heidi?
Yes. Shall I go ahead and read that?
Yes, please, Heidi, because it still hasn't reached my screen. So
okay.
You're welcome to read it, please.
Okay. This is a question from Eric Brenner Williams. There are two texts referenced in the preparatory materials for this call. One is quite terse and requires substantial subject matter. Expertise simply to read. Granted, you've chosen not to spend time on the substantive issues summarized in this particular reference. The other is 36 pages of, semi-law review material, which may present idiom barriers to non-common law. U.S., Canada, U.K., Australia, New Zealand readers, as well as the prolixity barrier of 36 pages. Why were these two resources selected, and what resources were not selected as preparatory materials for this call?
Well, all I had to hand, what I thought might be useful for this call was the one document, which is, I think, on the screen, which is headed the ITU and World Conference, is a briefing paper which which staff in ICANN presented to the board. So I thought that might be useful in this context. And the other paper is simply an analysis of some of the proposals. And as I said, it's based on the publicly available document that's been published by the ITU of all different proposals so far in the Council Working Group. I mean, I'm not sure what other documents. I mean, there's various other bodies have done analysis of the text, which you know, one can read. ISOC have done an analysis, and of other organisations.
Yes, thank you, Nigel. You will notice that there is a link on the chat at the moment, which goes over to a page where we have tried to link to a number of documents and I ask everyone on the call to have a look at the page and perhaps suggest other documents that they might wish to bring forth that are currently out there and that would help into understanding the issues and perhaps even being able to formulate some, help you and help others and perhaps formulating policy with their respective governments for those people that have connections to their respective governments. Any other questions?
Yes.
Or Nigel?
Alejandro Pizanti.
Yes, go ahead, Alejandro. You have the floor.
Hi, this is Alejandro Pizanti. It seems that you can hear me now.
Yes.
Can you hear me well? Olivier, can you check my... Very good. Nigel, I am glad that you and others in the ICANN team undertook to hold this webinar. And you are surely aware that a number of us are also being very active about Wikit in other spheres. The Internet Society in particular is a part of its policy team, keeping tabs on proposals, attending meetings, as well as ICANN does with the regional, for example, like CITEL. And some of us are also acting at the national level, pushing for our governments to open public consultations about the ITRs and about their participation in the regional meetings like CITEL, which are like the last official chance to put in documents before the totally random process begins after the formal one for documenting Wikit. We are very glad to see that your analysis is helpful to us, and we are trying to... Sorry, I have been called to speak slower, so I'll start very briefly to say the following. We have been participating in the local processes, and the governments of each country are a key party to contact when we are entering the last stage or last stages of the Wikit process. It is very useful for everybody who can to intervene in the public consultation or to start public discussions about the most important Wikit issues within our competence. We don't have to go out and speak about roaming charges or things which don't have a direct meaning for the Internet, unless they are also within our association's expertise. But we certainly have, I feel, almost an obligation to go out and also do this in a coordinated way where each organization with autonomy, but we're also mindful of what others may be doing. Very briefly, in my case, in Mexico, last Friday, a number of members of the Internet Society in different capacities, because they also belong to other organizations, attended a public consultation meeting and made sure to convey the views that the definition of telecommunications in the ITRs should not be changed, that the proposal to make the ITUT recommendations binding should not be forwarded, that they should remain not binding. And there's an interesting discussion there with the rules, like the even the constitution of the ITU, where some of these rules can actually be interpreted to be binding already, so one has to be very careful there. And we found a different approach to the number misuse issue, which needs to be addressed. And that number misuse from some governments is that they would like for everybody who gets a call from abroad into a telephone, or at least a cell phone, to be able to identify the calling number. This fits very well into the number misuse issue, and it's a technical impossibility or near possibility for some calls originated within the Internet, and the ease of spoofing this. But to conclude, my point is, I believe that we need to go into more detail in each country, seeing what the local administrations are able to do and listen to, influence the outcome, and do it in a very careful dialogue with that which is actually being said in the ITU environment, because otherwise we can easily be dismissed as, oh, you're speaking about something that is actually not in the text or that has already been left behind or out. Thank you.
Yes.
I mean, I think what you say is enormously valuable, and what I should have said, and I do apologize for not mentioning this in the introduction, is the enormous work that is taking place in the regions in terms of trying to formulate policy, whether it's in CITEL, whether it's in SEPT within the European region, whether it's in the Arab region, whether it's in the African region or the RCC. A lot of work is going into formulating positions, and I think, you know, the at-large community is obviously playing a very important role in this.
Nigel, if I may interrupt you there, apologies. It's almost offensive to see an event is delivered like in vacuo before organizations which have actually been working real hard, risking the reputations and sometimes jobs and the getting into divergence, which not all are as friendly as the one in Mexico, and to see ICANN dealing with this like from the ivory tower, its very own ivory tower, is not. We are all here to cooperate, to collaborate, to really build everything we can together, including ICANN. And I hope that you can have this in mind for further cooperative approaches in the coming months. We'll need all the cooperation we can put together. Thank you.
Yes. So no. Thank you very much for that. And certainly what you said about number misuse and other aspects, I think is important. I mean, it's important that the people that understand these issues help explain to governments and to other stakeholders how translating from the telecommunications environment to the internet environment sometimes just does not work in relation to such issues.
Okay, thank you, Nigel. Thank you, Alejandro. Are there any more questions?
Olivia, this is Heidi. We have questions from Victor, Carlton, and Euro.
Well, since I can't read them, could you please go ahead, Heidi?
Victor, are you able to come off of mute? I see you posted your question.
Yeah, my hand was called in, but I posted my question on the chat room.
Victor, this is Heidi. Do you mind if I read your question? Okay, this is Heidi. I'll go ahead and read Victor's question. The ITU is a member state organization, but we also have within ICANN the GAC. My question is, what ICANN did to impact countries' proposals or positions via the GAC?
Well, I think that's the that's a really excellent question. If it was not so late in the evening, and I could be rather undiplomatic in my response, but I won't be. No, I mean, I think it's a good question, because clearly we could have this sort of discussion in the GAC, but that I, as a member of the ICANN staff, of course, have no control over the GAC agenda. I do talk to member states. Indeed, I was talking to some member states in Europe yesterday and saying how it would be useful for the GAC to have discussions in this area, but clearly that is something for the GAC itself. I mean, it's not for ICANN itself. It's up to the GAC chair and the other officials in the GAC to decide whether they want to discuss these issues. But I think you have really identified something important, because the as much as the is yourselves playing a very important role in the ICANN community, the GAC play an important role in the ICANN community. And so if we're all in the same community and people are firing arrows into that community, then within the community, we should be discussing our response to those arrows. I'm sorry, that's not a very good metaphor, but you can perhaps see where I'm going. So I would see it be quite logical for the GAC to discuss, certainly by Toronto or after Toronto when it becomes slightly more clearer what sort of proposals are going to be discussed in December, that perhaps the GAC should be discussing some of these issues. But that, as I say, that's not for me as a member of the staff. But thank you for that question.
Thank you, Nigel. Back to you.
This is Carlton.
More questions?
This is Carlton. Can I speak?
Yes, Carlton. I don't know yet if you're where you are in the queue. Unfortunately,
he's next.
Anything. I'm blind here, so I'm trying to deal with this.
Olivier, Carlton is next, and then it's Euro.
Okay, thank you, Heidi. So, Carlton, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. This is Carlton Samuels for the record, and I'm really asking this question again on behalf of my colleague, Evan Leibovich. He is making the same connection that was done by Victor as well as Alejandro. And the question is, I'm reading it, we have heard in this talk about the lack of respect or lack of appreciation in WICCET for ICANN's multi-stakeholder model. Yet in building a strategy for defending ICANN's relevance and advancing its benefits compared to a state-run model, ICANN is neglecting and in effect ignoring the active participation of its community. Most action is to be undertaken by ICANN staff in consultation with industry, but not with the extensive end-user community that is a visible, unique feature of ICANN's internal processes. How can ICANN defend the multi-stakeholder model on the global stage if it doesn't have enough confidence in this community to actively support its vision? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carlton. Nigel, any response?
Well, I don't think I can really respond on that. I mean, I think I understand your point in that, you know, that this is something that was, you know, was raised in Prague, that perhaps we don't take enough account within the staff of the work that's being done in the user community, and perhaps we don't. But I certainly, as I tried to answer the previous question, I think everyone has a role to play here, and everyone can influence their governments, and it doesn't matter whether you're a business or a user or whatever. If you have influence to bring to bear on governments, then that is of enormous use. So I certainly don't undervalue the role that the user community is playing, but I can't comment to the wider ICANN community.
Thank you, Nigel. It is worth noting that you are speaking to a community that is made up of at-large structures, many of whom have strong links to their local governments and have a history of work in the IT sector, and certainly a civil society part of the IT sector. Thus, really having been through many, many battles over the year. So what you have here is really a result, and I think many in our community are just very disappointed that ICANN doesn't seem to be even recognizing this result. More out of stupidity than anything else, I gather. I'd like to think it's more out of stupidity than anything else, because if it's anything else than that, then, of course, that goes deeper, and we would have to look at that.
The next question is from Euro, so I'll pass the floor over to Euro.
Thank you. Thank you, Olivier. This is Yrjö Länsipuro for the transcript record. First of all, I would like to echo what Alejandro and Olivier said about the possibilities of actually influencing the government's positions on a national level. The ISOC, in a number of countries, ISOC is actually part of the ISOC chapters, I would say, are actually part of the national preparations. That's the case in Finland, that's the case in Sweden, and so on and so forth. And since I think that it's an established principle by now that these things should be multi-stakeholder based, I would really urge all ISOC chapters, all ALSs, to go to the governments and say, hey, I mean, we want to be part of the national preparations where the national standpoints, national positions are made. The second thing is that I'd like to ask Nigel, from your vantage point in Brussels, how do you think, I mean, there was this suggestion, this proposal from the European Commission for something that should be the common position of the European Union in WCIT, and how you see that the proposal, was that helpful? Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for that. And you're right, of course, on the European points. The European Union, made up of the 27 member states, has a role to play in this discussion. And the European Commission have proposed what they call a council decision. So this would be if it's adopted, it would be a decision of the 27 member states. And that decision would effectively say that those member states in Dubai should negotiate to the effect that they don't accept any proposals in the ITRs that would be contrary to European Union legislation or European Union policies. So that in itself, I think, is a helpful is potentially, and I don't think I can have a view on this. I'm just talking as an ex-government official here to an extent. But I think it's helpful that the European Union reminds its members from time to time that they have certain obligations under European treaties to uphold. So I think, yes, I think that's useful. And thanks for bringing that up. I mean, we'll have to see what effect it has. And just a comment on national preparations. I mean, one, because this wicket has been given quite a lot of publicity in the media, I think it's encouraged more national preparations or more open national preparations than we might have seen in the past. And certainly I know a number of countries are publicly consulting civil society, internet users, and a number of other constituents on what they think of the wicket. So I think that's very useful indeed.
Okay, thank you very much, Nigel. I understand there's a last question from Evan that Carlton will be able to read to the record.
This was already done, Olivier.
This is Heidi. Olivier, should I read it?
Yes, go ahead, Heidi, please.
Okay. It is telling that this is a webinar with Q&A as opposed to strategy planning. Is there any plan to improve upon this process?
Sorry, what? I didn't understand. Could you repeat the question?
Yes,
I think I can read the question now. It's telling that this is a webinar with Q&A as opposed to strategy planning.
And then there's a follow-up. Is there any plan to improve upon this process?
Well, I'm not sure what is this a question for me? I'm not sure what it means as such. Does it mean that we should be outlining what our strategy is in a rather more coherent way rather than just taking questions?
Olivia, this is Heidi.
Yes, Heidi. I don't see the question, so I didn't quite understand it either, I must say. If it's down to the planning of the webinars, I think that this webinar was specifically for an introduction to the subject. With regards to actual strategies, well, this is one thing which I'm not quite sure how... what the next step is, really. It's something for this group here and certainly for Nigel to be able to let us know what the next proposed step is. We've heard during this call that there is a resource that ICANN could make use of. We've also heard a call for the different at-large structures to speak to their governments. The next step forward, really, would be, I guess, to coordinate this in some sort and in some way. But this is just speculation. It really depends on whether ICANN, the organization, is ready to move forward and actually go ahead with collaborating. And I don't quite know whether ICANN has a strategy in how it will be involved in the WCIT. Since ICANN itself does not have an actual seat at the table. Nigel, perhaps could you expand just a few more minutes on this because we are reaching the end of this call?
Yes. I realize that it's late here and I've certainly been up nearly 19 hours. So, I mean, two things I think to mention here. In terms of the overall wicket strategy, ICANN has been discussing this with the board to an extent. As you say, we don't have a our ICANN is not a sector member, and therefore does not have a seat at the table, so to speak, in Dubai. It's possible that members of the ICANN community, and this of course includes the at-large community, it includes other parts of the community, including staff, may well take part in the Dubai discussions as members of national governments. So that's a possibility. But ICANN itself will probably not be represented as such. But we are adopting a strategy, and the strategy that we're adopting, and I'm not saying it's a strategy that will have to evolve, but the strategy has been to try and track all the different regional preparation phases. So we have ICANN staff or we have ICANN consultants at all the different preparation meetings that are taking place over the next 2 to 3 weeks. So in Sittel next week, in Copenhagen next week for SEPT, in Africa in 2 weeks' time, Cairo or somewhere else next week or the week after for the Arab preparation meeting. So we are trying to understand what's going on in the regions. Where appropriate, we're outlining in those discussions that our belief is that proposals should not be put forward that would have the effect of fragmenting the internet or calling into question the interoperability or the openness of the internet. So we are making those points. But I think it is fair to say, and I do take the point, that come December, when we've seen the totality of all the proposals,
then I might well need to take a position on some of those proposals, because I suspect the media might well want to know our particular views on proposals that would affect our mission. But that's just a possibility, and of course it has to be discussed internally and with the board, etc.
Thank you, Nigel. One more question, actually, that's come on the chat, because you have mentioned the different meetings that are taking place. Will at-large be involved directly in any of this, or is it just ICANN staff that will join all of these?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, perhaps we ought to establish a way of knowing that if there are particular at-large, you know, particular staff that could participate in certain meetings, then that might be able to be facilitated in certain ways. I can't really say more than that. I mean, clearly it makes sense for us to try and participate in as many of the regional fora as we can.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Nigel. It's Olivier here. And I see one last question from Alejandro Pizanti, who's put his hand up. There are some questions on the chat as well, and I ask staff to keep the chat. And perhaps if you do have time, because I do realize that it is late for you, Nigel, you do have time to answer those in writing, that would be great. But Alejandro, you have one last question?
Thank you. Yes, Nigel, I think that if the strategy for walking into Wicked for ICANN is only the part you have described, you are both really walking into a high risk condition and doing so deliberately by knowing the resources that ICANN itself has at its avail. The first one of them is the goodwill of lots of people and organizations who want for ICANN to succeed, who understand very well that ICANN cannot be a member of the ITU. There's no reciprocity there. It's denied a seat by its own decision, and it's a correct decision. But it doesn't have to be that way only. You do have our limited but existing capacity as at-large structures, each of our organizations, to actually be responsible and not only ask stuff from ICANN, but actually go out and do something for ICANN without asking for a plane ticket or for a seat in a meeting. What we have to do is responsibly go to our national delegations as much as we can to create a fuss in public fora outside, to follow the Wicked meeting the same way in which we did the PP10 in Guadalajara, through people in the delegations and through everything else, to the point of also creating the risk of great shame for wrong decisions in the ITU. You may remember, or if not, we can reconstruct it for you, how at some point in some really absurd discussion during the plenipotentiary meeting in 2010, Amadou Touré himself had to call on the assembly to be decisive and get, because they were becoming the laughing stock of the world. This kind of pressure is out there. ICANN doesn't have to organize it. ICANN doesn't have to create a mandate. And we have to create any exchange or barter with ICANN by demanding to be there. It's just our standard obligation as internet citizens to help steer these processes the right way and avoid and manage the things to avoid the greatest damage. But you have to open ICANN to its own members and constituents for this to be possible. I think that we need to have this discussion at the latest in Toronto, maybe a second session of this webinar, more oriented to getting organized.
Sorry, I've lost you.
I think we might have lost Alejandro, and it's an absolute shame because his words made a lot of sense.
So there was a glitch. Hi, there was a glitch in that connection. So here is Alejandro Pesanti just finishing this intervention. We need to get better organized. I hope that what Nigel has told us is only a part of the strategy, and a lot of the alliance is not yet described. And Nigel, I would encourage you enormously, at the risk of, you know, getting I can connect later if this doesn't happen, to find a way to cooperate and collaborate with ISOC in particular, with Internet Society, and with RIRs and every other possible party that's already in the iSpace. Then, if this is happening, also, you may not want to disclose. There are good reasons for not disclosing all the gory details of how your strategy and tactics are going on, but make sure that people know they are being taken into account, and that they have ICANN at their side when they are getting into this fight for the Internet's sake. Most of us are doing something. I mean, I can tell you, I have read Carlton speak about it. I know Rudy is doing things. I know Irio is doing. Lots of people here are doing things just because we think it is the right thing, not because we're party line from the Internet Society or ICANN or anyone else. It's the right thing to do. And ICANN is actually risking alienating these people by not being more open in the collaboration. Thank you.
Right. No. I take that point entirely. I mean, I should have said earlier about our cooperation with ISOC and the RIRs. I mean, we tend to sit with them in the regional meetings, but that doesn't mean to say we shouldn't do more to involve other players. And this is something I'll.
There's an ecosystem. You don't have to colonize. You have to act together. This is an ecosystem. Without an H.
Right.
Okay, this is Heidi. Okay. We've lost Olivier, and we're just dialing him back. And I see we're getting additional questions, but we do need to... Okay, he's asked that we take Sebastian's call. Sebastian?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Hello, can you hear me? Okay, thank you. Yeah, I just want to say my agreement with what Alexander just said. It's and we have a problem here, and it's why I like this conference. It's that it will show to everybody that at large and LSEs are ready to stand up and to do things and to work, and we can't just rely on some staff and consultants. It's a discussion that we have at all levels within ICANN, and my terrible impression is that we are not heard by staff and eventually by the board itself, but it remains to be seen, and we have a meeting next week, and I will raise your concern and try to be your voice during this discussion we will have hopefully next week. But as Alexandre said, Toronto will be a little bit late, but it's we need to have some discussion. One of the problems is how we want to have a public discussion on all that, and that's one part of the difficulty. It's why this type of conference call is very, very important. And I hope that Nigel, you will take back what you heard here to staff and to the full board, please. Thank you very much.
Of course, it's a pleasure to hear, Sebastian. It's a pleasure to hear from you, and thank you very much. And of course, you make a direct contribution at the board level to all of this.
Well, thank you very much. I'd love to continue speaking about this subject. It seems to be one that is very close to many of our many of us. Unfortunately, we are totally running out of time. I know there are more people who wish to ask questions, and I've also heard, and unfortunately, I actually dropped out a few times, so I missed some of the discussion, but I've heard that there is a need for more of this type of interaction, and especially the sharing of the strategy and perhaps building of a strategy together on this. But what I suggest, Nigel, is to schedule a further call later on, either later on in the month, but certainly before the Toronto meeting. In that call, speak more about the strategy and about the way forward to get ICANN to work closer to its at-large structures and getting at-large structures to work closer to ICANN on this and to bring forward their knowledge in the ICANN process. Certainly, as Alejandro says, there are position papers which have been written by some of the at-large structures. There are some links with governments that some of the structures have, and working together on this is something which I'm sure many here will support. So we have a recording of this call. We also have a recording of the chat. We also have a page, WCIT page, which I would ask staff to type into the chat again, please. For those people that are on the call, if you could check on that page for resources, and I repeat it again, if you can add some more links to those resources. But if you also have questions or comments, further comments to make for Nigel to read through and to answer, then you can comment on that page, and those will then be put together for Nigel and his team to be able to answer. And further, I think that if we can have another call with you, Nigel, it would be very, very helpful, both for us, but also for ICANN, I believe. Would you be
yes. Thank you very much, Olivier. Thank you for this opportunity to talk. And, of course, we'd be delighted to take part in a further call.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Nigel, and thanks to everyone here who have been on the call. We are half an hour late. We've been about half an hour over time, so the time is now 22:35 UTC. Thanks, everyone, and this call is now adjourned. And thanks, of course, to the interpreters for having been with us for an extra half an hour. Thanks, everybody, and bye-bye.
Thanks, bye. Everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia.
Thank you, everyone. The Adobe Connect audio will now be disconnected. The Adobe Connect chat will be posted on the meeting page, as well as the recording and the transcript. Thank you very much for your attendance.